Game.
Good morning. This is Leah Wilson, and I am here with Marielle Elizabeth. And she is a photographer, social media consultant, and slow living advocate. So welcome.
Hi.
Thank you so much
Thanks
for joining
so much for
us.
Having me.
We are here in her beautiful loft space, surrounded by her beautiful things and her lovely little cat, Rory. So if you hear any meowing, that's who it is. It's not either of us. So thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Yeah. And in full truth, this is actually our second go, as I forgot to turn the recording on. So I'm watching it now recording. I know that we have it working. So we got all the jitters out and we have a half a cup of coffee in us, and let's give this another try. So can you tell us what exactly being a slow living advocate means?
Perfect. So for me, being a slow living advocate means looking at the things that you bring into your life, and whether that's people, activities, or belongings, it's willing the time to commit to those things and to have those things in your life for a longer period of time, and deciding how you want to spend that time. So I think one of the common misconceptions is that slow living is about doing everything really slowly.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't feel that, because my life is very jam-packed, but everything that is in my life is intentional. I think a great example of that is, I joke with this a lot, I have a Jamie and the Jones sweater. I ordered it in August. It took 3 months to get it. Now that I have it, I am truly terrified of wrecking it, so I hand wash it in my bathtub like a turn of the century, like two centuries ago person.
Yeah.
Because I want it to last forever.
Okay.
To me, that's slow living. It's having the patience and time to figure out what you want to have in your life and invest in it. And then it's having the patience and time to let it grow and become part of your life. And then it's having the patience and time to care for it and extend that life.
Yeah.
and have it with you for a long period of time. Slow living is about making sure that the things that you have in your life are actually enriching it.
Right.
And that it's okay that it takes longer to get those things, and it takes longer and more work than the immediate gratification of, you know, going to the store and buying something that's like, it'll do, or it's okay.
Yep.
It's waiting and having that patience and then really appreciating those things in your life and committing the time to having those things be sustainable and a long-term fixture in who you are.
I love that.
And I mean, this is my second try of saying it, so I think I was more eloquent this time.
It was really beautifully done. And I really appreciate that. I think that, again, when I look around your home, that really embodies exactly how I feel about everything that I'm surrounded by right now, that it was done with intention and that it's beautiful and it has its place in your home.
Thank you. It also means that sometimes you don't get things right away. Like, there's parts of our living room. I mean, that coffee table was a gift from my mom when we moved into our old house forever ago. And we would like a new coffee table that the legs aren't glued onto, but we haven't found the right coffee table, and it's not a thing that we want to invest money in. And so there's also like that back end of slow living, which is sometimes you have things you don't love for a long period of time waiting until you find the thing that you do love.
Yeah.
Versus just like switching out stuff that you kind of like repeatedly.
Exactly. And I think that, again, if we can bring that into every part of our lives, that we are living with more joy and more peace because we're not surrounded by crap.
And I think that that also extends to like what you do and how you fill your time and what are your hobbies and who are your friends?
Mm-hmm.
Are they people you actually want to spend time with?
Right.
Are they people that you like, you kind of feel obligated to have in your life? I think that you can take that same mentality of like what it takes to buy a good sweater as to what it takes to have something that's a hobby, or what it takes to have a job you like, or things like that.
Yep.
And I think that it definitely extends out of the physical into the more, metaphysical, that's not the right phrase. Out of the physical into the more ethereal and emotional side.
Yes. Yes. And that makes sense. And it's so much of, you know, what I try to convey to my consulting clients is, if you want to be a fashion designer and you want to be rich and famous, you've chosen the wrong profession.
Oh, no one will know who you are. Like, maybe they'll learn your name if that's your brand name.
Yeah. And I think that that's just it. But to live slowly with intention and to choose a life of sharing art,
mm-hmm.
is part of that.
Yeah.
right? You're living it with intention, everything that you're doing and sharing.
And then you also get a sense of pride. I mean, if you pointed anything in my home, 90% of it, I can tell you exactly where it's from and why we picked that and not something else, or why we made it ourselves. I say that very broadly because my partner does most of the house building, but yeah. Like this table, he built for me. Because
and it's beautiful.
It was the table I wanted.
Yeah.
And we knew what we wanted and we made it out of recycled materials.
Yeah.
But it took way longer to make and to scale and things like that.
Of course. Yeah. It's lovely. So now in terms of, you know, you living a slow life, like you said, you have a lot mm-hmm. going on. So
yeah.
Photography, social media, consulting. Give us an overview, the macro overview of your professional life.
It's split into kind of three realms. There's the actual taking the photographs. So I would say I spend at least 2 days a week going for the different businesses and brands I represent, touching base with them, checking in. Is there anything new? What are they working on? What are they excited about? Are there any engagements that I need to be aware of? And just straight up taking photographs of their day-to-day operations. I would say that's, you know, the biggest piece of what I do. The next biggest part would be then editing it and making sure all that content ends up where it's supposed to end up.
Yep.
I am very lucky. I have two wonderful contractors that help me. I have one person that does blog writing for me. And so I'll say like, oh, hey, Hannah, can you write a blog about this? And she'll get it back to me. And then I'll go through it, edit it, add photos, and make it a piece that I'm really proud of. And then I have a person that does a lot of the posting for me. With the new algorithm, you have to be so active. You have to be engaged. And for the number of accounts I run and how busy my weeks are, it reached a point where it wasn't sustainable for me to be posting, commenting, and liking for half an hour a day on every single account I run.
Mm-hmm.
So Ellie does that, and she's so good at it. So making sure all that content and that delegation is set up for the people that I work with, and editing all that content that I take. And then the third part of my business is the least glamorous side of it, which is writing contracts, having meetings, sending out invoices, tracking stats, making sure that the objectives I'm working on are actually helping those businesses, and doing the really boring behind the scenes stuff that you absolutely have to have and have to do to be a successful business.
That is a lot. That is a lot for one person, let alone you doing it for multiple brands and with support.
In my defense, I didn't have support until a few months ago. So to me, this seems so much more manageable now because
and very glamorous that you have support.
Well, it just means I go to bed at midnight now instead of 2 a.m. Like right. It's just been so much better for my mental health and my emotional health to have that. Yeah.
And so in terms of working with your clients and helping them find their voice, what do you normally suggest? So this is kind of a at least two-part question. What do you normally suggest in helping them find their voice and being able to build that social media personality, as well as what do you suggest should be a regular posting? How often should they be posting to create that consistency to be communicating clearly with the customer?
Perfect. Okay, so the first part of your question of like what they should be doing to communicate, I think that there's kind of two things that need to happen. First, they need to find out who they're communicating with. I think a lot of brands love to say that their market is everyone, and that's simply not true. If you only sell, you know, clothing that is geared towards a woman's body or a female body, then you're probably not marketing to men. If your clothing tends to be geared towards, you know, a younger generation, then you're probably not marketing to 80-year-old men. And I think that figuring out specifically who your market is and who you're selling your products to or who you want your brand to impact is step one. You have to figure out who you're talking to. And then the other side of that is then you have to figure out what you want to say to that person. And so I think that's taking a look at your brand and figuring out what makes you different and why your business or you as a company are different from every other brand out there, and figuring out how you want to convey that. What is important to you? What is your mission statement? What are your goals? What are your absolutely must have that you would convey to any person that sat down across from you and asked you about your brand? You have to figure out how to say that exact message to the demographic that you've already outlined. And so I think as soon as you get those two things happening, you will have incredibly successful social media. You will have social media that is engaging and building a community. I think people often view social media as having the most likes, having the most followers. And I truly believe that it is way more important to have followers that actually care about what you're saying and actually care about who your brand is. I think a business would be much better off with 500 loyal, adamant followers that are engaged and empowered by your brand than having 3,000 that don't care who you are. And I think figuring out how to have that engagement is really, really important as a brand. Even more so than, you know, the number of likes and followers you have. As far as how to have that engagement and how to have that posting, I would say a minimum of 3 posts a week is probably at the low end. And I would say do not ever post more than 2, max 3 times a day, because it is very unlikely that you are creating enough content that is interesting enough that you should be posting 3 times a day, unless you have like a huge sale or a huge birthday event or you're doing a big charity give back. Great. Then, you know, that one day is maybe a day where you post more heavily. But on average, I think as little as 3 times a week, you can get away with as long as the things you're posting are meaningful. I would rather you post 3 times a week, really great content that sparks conversation and is interesting and engaging, than every single day with content that's kind of garbage and salesy.
Okay. So in terms of the type of posts, what do you normally recommend? Because they can't all be, as you said, they can't all be sales posts.
No. So I typically break it down into a rule of 9, because when you look at an Instagram grid currently, you see about 9 images. So how many of those images are of people? How many of those images are of places? How many of those images are of things? If you figure out who your client is and who the person you're talking to is, then it opens up the ability to talk to different parts of their life. Because ultimately, when you're creating a brand online, you're creating a lifestyle. And so where does that person eat? What are restaurant recommendations you as a brand love that would love to recommend? What are other businesses that you love that would love to recommend? What are local events happening or local things happening in your city? What are some behind the scenes things happening in how you're producing your garments or your products? Who is making those things? Are you featuring all the members of your team? Mm-hmm. I think that there's actually quite a lot of diversity you can come up with in content, but it's expanding it outside of just what am I selling?
Right. I'm learning so much right now.
All the other stuff surrounding it. Yeah.
My brain is spinning, thinking of like all of the different posts that I should be doing.
Style. Fame.
Silhouettes.
Glamour. Runway.
So now, can you tell us a little bit more about the evolution of your career? How did you get to being the owner of a creative agency?
I think that a lot of people think that in order to get your dream career, you have to start at a young age and work towards it forever on like this single path. And for me, and for a lot of people I have met over time, it's kind of you end up with a bunch of different jobs and you kind of figure out exactly what in those jobs you love the most and what didn't work. And it all kind of culminates in what the job you're supposed to be doing actually is. In fairness, I didn't think my job would be a job. Like I didn't know, how could I have known as a child that social media would be a full-time business?
Yeah.
So I actually went to school. I have a degree in psychology and a minor in English from the U of A. And during school and for the better part of 10 years, I worked with children with disabilities. So I worked with early childhood intervention, with newly diagnosed children with autism. And then I actually ran a summer camp for 5 years.
Oh my God, I love that.
Sunshine
See,
Coast.
Things I didn't know.
Yeah,
I
used to live in Vancouver for 4 months of the year running as a summer camp for kids with high functioning and visible disabilities.
Okay.
The most common question I would get is, are the children invisible? Which is like, no, how is that? Oh, that would have been such a hard job. No, it was children with high functioning neurological disabilities. So okay. Obsessive compulsive disorder, ADD, ADHD, yeah. Autism spectrum disorder, high functioning fetal alcohol spectrum, or I guess it's NASD now. Anxiety disorder, impulse control. That's a hard one.
That's a hard one.
Oppositional defiance disorder was also
really
hard. And we would take these kids into the woods for 6 days and not lose or kill them, which is very hard when you have 5 kilometers of oceanfront, and wild animals everywhere because we were deep in the woods, like the Sunshine Coast.
I have to say that, you know, only knowing you for a short period of time, but now knowing this, it makes a lot of sense.
It really does.
But I mean that in the best way. Oh, like in terms of your advocacy work, I think that you have such a strong voice for those that are underrepresented. And I could get really emotional right now having found this out about you, because you bring such passion to what you do, and you instill that in me and others around you. And so it's really nice to find out these little tidbits of how you got to being who you are today.
And I love being a camp director. I think it was the exact type of job that it seems like it would have nothing to do with managing a business, but ultimately I was managing a staff team of 15. Yep. I had clients, which were, you know, very difficult to manage.
And demanding.
I had the expectations of the site that we were renting from to also manage. I mean, I would be making schedules for five different cabins at a time with 10 different activity blocks in the day that would then have to correlate with the interests of those kids. Like,
right.
A lot of thinking, like fragmented thinking, yep, about like what other people would like or dislike, which is essentially what I do all
do now.
Day.
Yeah. What, and you're breaking the posts and
creative problem solving. And when something comes up, having to manage it quickly and handle it without anyone knowing that there's a problem going on. All of those skills, I think, are the exact same as what I do now. I just don't live in the woods anymore. I see less raccoons. I come across less bears when I'm walking to work now.
Yeah.
So I did that for 5 years. And
that's amazing.
It was a job I very much still loved. And during that time, I was given opportunities specifically with Lux Beauty Boutique out of Edmonton.
Yep.
I had a 3-on-1 that changed my life, where it was me meeting with the managers. And they said, what would you like differently? And I said, I've noticed your Instagram's kind of boring. Can I do that?
Right.
And that was pretty much it.
A chance on you.
Yeah. I was given that opportunity. I think it was like, okay, we'll pay you for 5 hours a week to run our Instagram. And I was like, great, sure. I'll try it. I'll figure it out. And I really liked it. And from that, then they offered me blogging as a business for them. And I think that was such a great learning opportunity of like really learning how to talk to that client and how to take on a different brand voice that isn't always my own. And as you know, I also improvise. And improv is literally just taking on character voices and committing to being a person that's not necessarily yourself.
Yeah.
So that kind of factored in. And so slowly it became clear that all these parts of my life that no one would, you know, look at it and be like, oh, of course, they must run social media, became things that were like so integral to what my job is now.
Yeah.
I decided to stop running summer camp primarily because it's a 4-month-a-year job. I would have had to move to Vancouver. It didn't pay nearly enough to support me living in the one of, if not the most expensive city in Canada to live in. It's not what my partner does. It's very different than what he does. And that was hard. We have gone, I guess this summer, it'll be 6 years where we don't spend our summers together. He teaches at the Banff Center.
Yeah.
So it was his turn to kind of advance his career. And I think that running a summer camp is a really cool opportunity, but I think it's best suited for someone in their mid and early 20s. It's hard to be able to kind of torch your life every summer, which was what I would do. I would move out of Edmonton. We would, you know, move to the West Coast, and I would work 6 days on, 24 hours a day, 4 months of the year.
Yeah.
And it's also hard then to supplement the other 8 months where it's like, I'd like to work with you. I will be gone for a quarter of the year.
Right.
It's very hard to have that. And so when I finished my degree, it was clear of the things I was doing, I really loved social media. And I also kind of came to a realization of, I don't have to work with children and adults with disabilities to be doing good in the world. There are other things in my life that I can be just as passionate about that doesn't involve me having to spend my whole life working in this one specific thing.
Yep.
And so for me, the thing I wanted to change my voice and advocate for is locally owned business. And I hate seeing locally owned businesses close and leave our city. And I think a way to prevent that is to help them compete with big business and to help share their stories and why you should want to spend 15 extra dollars on their product than a similar product you could buy at a Chapters Indigo. And being able to share that and to build that loyalty and commitment from our community, I think, is a wonderful place to be working on advocacy and another way to help strengthen the communities we live in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so speaking of, I mean, I think that you work within the fashion industry as well as an ethical advocate. And so what does that mean to you?
I think it means starting a conversation. I often view what I do with the fashion industry and what I do with fashion as a conversation. It's not about me lecturing people. It's not about me asking questions where I already know the answers. It's about having this sense of curiosity of where the things I'm wearing are coming from, and wanting answers and wanting it to be a conversation and asking other people, what are you struggling with? Because it can't just be me that is struggling in this very specific thing. There have to be other people that are equally frustrated or want to know answers. And I think social media has this wonderful power of expanding our social circles and yeah. our propinquity to outside of who we actually see in our physical lives. And when that happens, we can draw on this great pool of wealth of knowledge and be so much stronger as a voice in a collective. Because when I ask a question, I can then share that answer with X number of people.
Right.
And it's so much more powerful and interesting and engaging. And so I think there's this huge cross with what I do as a career and also what I do personally. Yeah.
That's amazing. And so you had said when I gave you the list of questions that I wanted to go over today, mm-hmm. that you wanted to speak about gray wash.
Yeah. Yeah.
The gray area.
Oh man. It's so fascinating to me that I often get asked, is this brand ethical enough? And it's impossible for me to answer that question because I have no idea what each individual person defines as ethical. Yeah. Obviously there's like the thing we all want, which is our fabric is picked and manufactured ethically. And then that ethical fabric with the least amount of waste of moving it around the world is then taken to factories where people are safely transported in and out, given living wages, given salaried benefits, given healthcare, given the things they need.
Safe environment to work in.
Safe environment. Environmental standards are upheld in this entire process. And then that garment is hand created in a place where that person is, you know, safely
respected,
respected, able to take mat leave, have all these privileges. Mm-hmm. And then that garment in the least amount of environmental waste is transported to where it needs to go, where it is then worn by brands that give back to their communities, that have equal wage employment for both genders of the people that they hire. That is then shown on different body types, different ethnicities. Women aren't airbrushed in their content. There's gender diversity in their marketing campaigns. And then those products are wonderfully distributed to the clients that they are intended for.
Right.
That's
and being
goal.
Able to articulate it through mm-hmm. their social media
yeah, and then,
marketing.
And then those brands also are completely able to voice as a brand how they're able to do that. That's Ooh. The goal.
Like that's overwhelming. Sitting
just
across
to
from
say,
you, right?
Isn't it hard just to get through?
Yeah.
And I'm sure I forgot steps. I'm sure I forgot things. What did they do with the water that they used to make those ethically sourced fabric?
Well,
things?
The notions, the tags. I mean, there's so many components.
Right.
And so how
and
can
the
we, the packaging, of course, right? Because you don't want to be using
you
plastic
will,
bags.
And like, you will never, or like, I mean, maybe one garment you own will ever meet that incredibly high standard. And that garment is probably going to be worth upwards of $1,000.
Right.
And so then there's the whole other flip side of it is like, how does a person that wants to be ethical without making six figures a year get to invest and be part of this conversation? So it's very hard for me to, you know, stamp this brand is ethical on a brand because what is ethical to you, what is ethical to me is so different.
Absolutely.
And I think the challenge when we list ethical as this huge thing is people just get turned off.
Because it's too overwhelming.
It's too hard. It's too hard. I can't possibly do this much homework. I need a sweater. I'm just going to go to the Gap.
Right.
Like that's... Well, right, and I forgot the step of the thing they buy, they then wear at least 30 times and
right.
mend and repair and then properly recycle.
Yeah.
So I think asking questions is the first step. I think setting personal goals of like, maybe I'll have one ethical garment or I'll look into one brand or I'll just research ethical clothing and figure out a way to have a smaller impact. That isn't any less ethical. I think that people are often afraid to still shop at big box stores. And absolutely, if you have the money and you can find the garment you want at a ethically made, locally produced, you know, shop or brand, great, do that. But if you can't and you can only afford, you know, $30 for a pair of Joe Fresh jeans, mm-hmm. great. Then do that and wear them. And when they break, mend them.
Right.
And then when they break down again, see if you can find it, maybe use old denim for patching. Or something like that. I think that there's a lot to be said in the conversation of ethical of just using and owning the things you buy.
Yeah. And making that commitment, as we spoke about earlier, to the process of seeking out, purchasing, and then...
And asking questions. Yeah. I think that as consumers, we often feel like we have no power, and we have so much power to these brands, especially in a world of social media. It is so easy for me to email a company or to message them and say like, hey, I'm interested in buying this. Where is it made? Who makes it? What are your standards? What are your factory standards? And sometimes I'll get answers I really like. Sometimes I won't get answers. And sometimes I'll just need a thing badly enough that I'll still have to buy it. Yeah. I think that as soon as we start making ethical fashion an exclusive club, we lose.
Right.
The idea behind a fashion revolution is it to be a revolution.
Yep.
Revolutions can't be an exclusive club.
Or idealistic.
They have to be for the masses. Yep. And to me, being an ethical consumer of fashion means asking questions. It means being interested in the conversation. It means watching what you're consuming and trying to do better.
So don't you think that we also need to take guilt out of the equation?
Yes.
And I say that after having this very similar conversation with my mother, who became very overwhelmed.
Yep.
And the Catholic guilt set in, and she kind of just shut off. And I was like, that's not...
If I can't do it perfectly, I can't do it at all because I'll already have failed.
Yeah. And that's not it, right? And explaining to my mother, who loves the Gap, that's okay. If you're going to commit to that piece and you're going to wear it for the 30 wears, you're going to take care of it, you're going to mend it, and then you're going to recycle it when you're done with it.
Yep.
Right? And I think that there can be an ethical component by living that way as well. And that's what we need to, again, I would like to encourage people to move away from stores that are not taking care of their employees and the environment, because I think that in the long run, it's just not sustainable.
Yeah.
And we are seeing more of that happening. We're seeing the sales of Zara and H&M go down, which is amazing. So keep going, guys. Keep buying from your local suppliers, your local vendors, and
I think one of the things about that guilt piece is, I think, especially, you know, the pitfalls of social media, and I know that this is often communicated, which is everyone is showing their best selves.
Yes.
Right? No one is showing the, you know, garbage thongs they buy from La Senza. but also, they're so cheap. It's impossible not to buy it. You know what I mean? Like, no one wants to air the things that they're failing at.
Yeah.
I think that that's one of the biggest dangers within this, is that if we only ever promote or talk about the things we do well at, we'll never get better.
Right.
Because we're already good at doing those things.
Yeah.
I think that there is so much room to admit our failings and our downfalls, and to stop pointing out others' failings and downfalls. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of shame often in ethical fashion of like, how could you do this? How could you support this brand? Mm-hmm. How could you? And it's like, maybe that's all they could afford right now. You don't know. Maybe they really needed a thing and they didn't have another option. Or maybe their goal this year was to buy one ethical garment and they already did. So yeah, they're going to buy everything else at Old Navy. Because last year they bought no ethical garments.
Yep.
And I think that we need
to moving that needle at least in the right direction.
Absolutely. It's small baseline shifts, and it's also admitting when we fail. And as a person that's like very vocal and talks often on social media about the things I'm doing well, one of my really big things, and I'm really excited about doing this in Fashion Revolution Week, is to bring up the things that I'm not doing well.
Right.
Being like, this is why I'm buying these products. I don't know better options. If you have better options, I'd love to hear them. But I also am not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my closet is ethical, but not all of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it ever will be entirely ethical.
I hope that we can move in that direction.
Yeah.
I think that we are. And I have a lot of faith in the younger designers that I see coming up that are not willing to compromise, right? Like where I was 14 years ago saying to my investors, no, I'm not going to move away from our environmentally friendly fabric. I'm not going to move offshore until I can be absolutely certain of where this clothing is being made. But I'm seeing it now being the only option for these young designers. They're saying, I'm not going to compromise on the fabric or the ethics or the environment.
Well, at the end of the day, they're never going to be able to sell things for cheaper than H&M. So
no.
They can't compete with that, so they have to justify their cost in another way. And a really great way to do that is to say, like, look at all the steps we did, look at all the work we did, look at the environmental impact we're having. This is why you want to invest your money.
Yes. And it would be really interesting. I think that you and I should sit down and almost create that flow chart that you kind of went through really quickly that felt really overwhelming.
Oh, it's so stressful.
It is. But I think that if we could give people a visual reference for that, and for them to be able to say, you know, I'm doing this, I haven't been able to find this, and being able to reach out and ask those questions. Mm-hmm. And again, having their customers, having the community, having other individuals within their network step up and say, oh, well, I have a resource for that.
Yeah. Well, anyone listening to this podcast, resources for ethically made bongs that come in plus size is a very real problem. I'm confident my underwear gets well over 30 wears, but I truly do need, like, undergarments for me as a plus size person is like, it doesn't exist.
Because you want something that you feel good in.
Well, that doesn't cut into my body and make me want to, like, cut them off at the end of the day. Yeah. Bathing suits is another one. I got asked recently for plus size ethical bathing suits, and I have no idea who to recommend. Nettle's Tale has some stuff, but I wouldn't describe it as like a true plus size.
Yep. But find, I mean, just having plus size is a difficult thing within the industry still. And I think that, again, more that we can inform people and educate them that this, you know, we were looking at some numbers and it's one in every $5 that is spent.
Yeah.
So there is a huge potential for designers to step up and to
and
enter this
market.
Well,
it's a gap in the market, right? Absolutely. Like, there's, your competition is very few and far between, and brands that do create small plus size lines within it. I love championing and sharing with people, and the response I get is massive. The click-through links on my Instagram stories when I shout out a plus size product that actually fits properly is, you know,
and fits properly is a big component. Oh, you cannot.
Yeah. Oh, this is my biggest pet peeve. If this is the only thing anyone takes away from this, you have got to stop selling like oversized boyfriend fit as your plus size line as well. If it is supposed to fit oversized and boxy, you cannot sell it to a plus size person as a tailored fit, because that is not what that garment was meant to fit like. And that is not having a plus size line. If it's supposed to fit oversized and boxy on a size 2, then it is also supposed to fit oversized and boxy on me, a size 20. Like, that is.
And so this is something, this is something that we are working on so that we can give you more tools and strategies to be able to implement it into your collections. Mm-hmm. To be able to offer a wider range, to do it well. And so I hope to have an update on that soon.
Yeah.
So stay tuned.
Sorry, I got to.
No, I love that. It's important that we get heated and that we're passionate about things. That's mm-hmm. how things change.
Yeah.
So now, just closing out this wonderful podcast, and thank you for being so patient and doing it 1.5 times. I think it's important that we talk about success. Mm-hmm. And what it means to you, because everyone defines success differently. But I do believe that, especially for young and new and emerging designers and young professionals, or professionals that may feel a little stuck in their careers, that we share what success means to us when we're living a full, whole life.
So for me, the biggest part of success is building stronger communities. That's what I care about most. I want to live in a town that isn't just big box outlet stores at the edge of town. I want there to be places to visit when you go somewhere that are unique and one of a kind and filled with passion and drive and hard work. And I want to help make those places exist, and I want to help sustain those places. The biggest thing in my world is constantly, am I making my community better? And I think any year that goes by where I can see direct impact of what I'm doing and it positive outcomes on my community, that is success for me. I also think success, and oh, this is bad that this is going on the record, is having some sort of balance in your life. my business is very young still. It's almost 2 years old as a full-time job, but being able to find ways in which your work isn't the only thing in your life. I think when it becomes the only thing in your life, it is unsustainable and you will not be able to have the longevity you need. So I think, to me, success is also being in a place where I am confident in what I'm doing and what I am giving and contributing to my community, but also allowing myself to exist outside of that.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that. It's on the record, but
it's
also
on the record.
Oh, boy.
And I think that that's just it. Again, with everything that we do, we just have to strive to do better and mm-hmm. to know that this is a process, that life is a process, and none of us make it out alive. So all we can do is enjoy what we have while we're here.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for having me into your beautiful home today.
It was absolutely my pleasure.
And I will be sharing Instagram handles and website. Mm-hmm. And you guys stay tuned because we are going to have some information on how to expand into size inclusive range. And
If you were looking for more resources, I actually do have a blog. It's basically a magazine. I release a magazine quarterly on my website. And there is a updated list of ethical lines that I love and support that do carry plus sizing. So amazing. You can also check that out.
Okay. And we will have a link for that. Perfect. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. She likes boys. Parties. Style. Fame.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.